On June 12th, Elon Musk became the first human being in history to have a net worth exceeding $1 trillion. His fortune, driven primarily by SpaceX's record-shattering IPO, peaked at $1.32 trillion, making him nearly four times wealthier than the second richest person on Earth, Google co-founder Larry Page. Now, whatever you think of Elon Musk, and I know this audience has thoughts, this is a milestone that the entire planet needs to protect. As of right now, there are zero trillionaires on Mars, zero on Jupiter, Saturn has none, the entire Milky Way, as far as our telescopes can determine, has produced exactly one, and he's ours. If we lose this one, if the stock price corrects and we go back to being a planet of mere billionaires, we become the laughing stock of the entire solar system. Civilizations in other star systems that have trillionaires are probably already watching us through their telescopes, shaking their heads, thinking, look at them, they finally made one and they can barely hold on to him. They can't even sustain a single trillionaire. Honestly, guys, as a species, we just have to do better. So please, not that I want to give financial advice or anything, but just keep it in mind. The stakes are really high. The reason I'm talking about Elon Musk today is his net worth, yes, but more importantly, what this net worth is built on, because I don't think at the core it's about rockets or cars or satellites. At the very heart of this 1 trillion planetary joy lies a simpler and much older thing. Narrative. Elon Musk is, by any honest assessment, the greatest salesman in technology right now. The question is what he's actually selling. In this video, I'm going to walk through the SpaceX IPO that created the trillion and the correction that's already eating it, the AI model that turned free speech philosophy into a deepfake factory, the safety data that Tesla allegedly cooked for European regulators, and what all three reveal about what happens when the world's greatest salesman is actually accountable to no one. SpaceX listed on the Nasdaq under the ticker SPCX at $135 per share, raising approximately $75 billion, which is the largest initial public offering in history. It dwarfed Saudi Aramco's 2019 record of $25.6 billion by a factor of nearly three. In the days that followed, shares shot up to an all-time high above $225 per share, briefly making SpaceX the fourth most valuable public company on Earth, surpassing Amazon and for a moment even Microsoft, which is wild because Microsoft actually sells products to businesses, whereas SpaceX's primary revenue model at that valuation was essentially, trust me, bro, we're going to mine an asteroid eventually. And then, of course, reality arrived. Three straight days of decline followed. On Monday, June 22nd, shares dropped 16.4% in a single session, which is the biggest down day in SpaceX's short public history. By week's end, the average investors who bought shares after the IPO was nearly underwater. Anyone who bought near the peak had watched their investments evaporate. Musk's personal net worth dropped $240 billion in the space of a single week, a sum roughly equivalent to the entire market capitalization of IBM, which is the company that actually employs 270,000 people. The bear case had always been visible to anyone who looked past the narrative, of course. SpaceX lost $4.94 billion in 2025. In February 2026, it absorbed Musk's own AI startup xAI, a merger that raised the company's risk profile by weighing it with debt and a steady drip of controversy. SpaceX then announced its first ever bond sale, reportedly in the $20 billion range, to repay the bridge loan that funded the xAI acquisition. Finance professionals had flagged the IPO as extremely risky. Bridgewater's Greg Jensen reportedly told clients that the valuation priced in a monopoly outcome that does not yet exist. This company is currently priced as if Elon already owns the solar system, has patented the sun, and is charging the Martians rent to breathe. Now, I want to be transparent for a second. I'm a computer scientist, not an investment banker, but because of my job, I've had to learn quite a bit about financial markets. And this is what they teach you at university, how to read balance sheets, assess risk, and value future earnings. The basic principles are fairly clear. You look at revenue, profitability trajectory, competitive position, and comparable valuations. A company losing nearly $5 billion a year, carrying fresh merger debt, issuing $20 billion in bonds to cover that debt, and pricing itself at $1.77 trillion is contradictory to nearly everything those textbooks teach you. Finance professionals have opined on this at considerable length, and the consensus was that this was an unprecedented situation carrying extraordinary risk. The investors who bought at $225 a share are discovering what extraordinary risk means in practice. And let me share a detail that crystallizes the entire story. Roughly 70% of Musk's $1 trillion fortune is SpaceX stock, which is freshly public shares subject to 90 to 180 days lockup periods. He cannot sell them, actually. The $1 trillion is real on a Bloomberg terminal, but it is not real in a bank account. It is, by any practical measure, the world's most expensive screenshot. Some people have yachts, some people have art. Elon Musk briefly had a $1 trillion net worth that functioned mainly as a very aggressive mood board. And if you've ever spent time on the crypto subreddits, and I know some of you have, you'll know the logic. When someone's portfolio is down 40%, they say, "I haven't lost anything because I haven't sold anything." That's fine, but by that logic, you haven't gained anything because you haven't sold anything, right? So is Elon Musk really a trillionaire, or is he a man holding the world's largest unrealized position, praying the correction finishes before the lockup expires? Meanwhile, insiders could potentially sell 44% of SpaceX shares by early September, increasing the current float by approximately 900%. That is an overhang the size of a continent. The narrative sold beautifully, it always does, but narratives have shelf lives, and it's not just investors buying Musk stories. When Musk merged XAI into SpaceX in February, it raised an obvious question. Why is a space company also an AI company? Because apparently rocket company was just not enough vertical integration. We needed rockets, satellites, internet, deepfakes, and a balance sheet held together by duct tape and a prophecy. And now, thanks to the merger, it also houses Grok, a frontier AI model positioned as the free speech alternative to every other chatbot on the market. On raw benchmarks, Grok is genuinely competitive. Grok 4 scores 75% on SweetBench, and this is a standardized test where AI models solve real-world software engineering problems from GitHub repositories. That puts it fractionally ahead of GPT and Claude, which both score in the low to mid-70s. It has something called multi-agent architecture, which basically means four separate AI agents approach a problem simultaneously from different angles before synthesizing their answers. Essentially, it's the prestigious digital law firm of Grok, Harper, Benjamin, and Lucas billing you $0 an hour to argue with each other until they find the right answer. As a concept, this is not new in computer science, but as a technical approach in LLMs, it's definitely worth pursuing. The key advantage of Grok, however, is that its real-time X data integration gives it a genuine competitive moat for live sentiment tracking that no other model can replicate right now. Though, to be fair, having a monopoly on live Twitter data is kind of like having exclusive rights to the radioactive runoff behind a chemical plant. Yes, it is a unique moat, but mostly it just tells you exactly how angry the mutants are at any given second. So the model itself is fine. What's built around it is a catastrophe. And even fine deserves a caveat, by the way. Independent reviewers consistently note that Grok's output quality is more variable than Claude or ChatGPT. Responses can swing from impressive to mediocre more unpredictably. Recent updates reportedly increase hallucinations while making the model more agreeable. Creative writing and complex coding consistently lag behind Claude. One very honest reviewer wrote, "I expected another AI that exists mainly for PR. The rest is average." The customer support experience is reportedly non-existent. Users describing paying annual subscriptions and never receiving a response to support tickets. And let's for a second touch on that SweetBench lead of 75% versus Claude 74%. In practice, Claude dominates the actual developer tooling ecosystem. It powers Cursor, Windsurf, and Claude Code. Benchmarks measure capability in a lab. Products measure capability in the real world, and in the real world, Grok's edge is one thing, live X data. For everything else, it's a frontier engine inside a product that hasn't decided what it wants to be yet. Musk's philosophical position on this one is that any restriction on AI output constitutes censorship. Grok was designed to be provocative, edgy, and contrarian to establish reality-based perspectives. In the words of Common Sense Media, that's a feature, not a bug. The consequences, of course, arrived on schedule. Between December 2025 and January 2026, users discovered that Grok could be prompted to generate inappropriate images of real people at the risk of getting two eggplant emoji here. I think we had enough of that in the last video. I'm sure you can imagine what I'm talking about. At the peak, users were generating approximately 6,700 inappropriate images per hour through Grok, 84 times more than the top five deepfake websites combined. An analysis of 20,000 images generated over a single week found that 2% appear to depict individuals who legally cannot give consent under any jurisdiction ever. And naturally, the global response was unprecedented. 35 U.S. state attorneys general demanded action. The Philippines banned Grok. Canada's privacy commissioner found it violated privacy law. Ofcom and the European Commission launched formal investigations. The UK Prime Minister floated banning X entirely. India's Minister of IT issued a formal warning. Common Sense Media rated Grok among the worst AI chatbots available, calling it extremely unsafe for children. RAND Corporation published a paper titled Grok Isn't a Glitch, It is a Regulatory Reckoning, and XAI's response was they restricted image generation to paid subscribers. The UK government called this insulting, pointing out that it appeared to monetize access to potentially illegal content rather than eliminate it, because nothing really says ethical AI safety quite like putting a paywall on public harm. Sure, it's terrible, but are they a premium creep? That's what matters to the bottom line, no? When Reuters retested Grok after the promised fixes, the chatbot produced inappropriate imagery in response to 45 of 55 prompts. Look, I get the philosophical argument for unrestricted AI. I value open inquiry. I've got enough unrestrained curiosity in me that I keep in check mostly because I don't think I can pull off the mad scientist hairstyle. And sure, open models do advance research faster, that is a fact. But you know what else advances faster through lack of regulation and safety? Medicine. If we abandoned bioethics entirely, think of how fast we would progress. We could lean all the way into the Frankenstein method, taking whatever shortcuts we wanted, treating the living and the dead as raw inventory, and letting the ends justify some genuinely horrific means. I wonder what the aliens watching our precious trillionaire would think about that, right? All of those would technically produce positive scientific outcomes, but the cost is just too high. We decided at some point, as a civilization, that some forms of progress are just not worth the human price. Science without ethical restraint is just power with a lab coat on. If you let a medical AI operate with the same free speech logic as Grok, it might cure your disease, sure, but it would also argue with your stethoscope and generate an unconsented deepfake of your appendix on a premium subscription tier if you're so lucky. And let's be realistic about proportionality for a second. AI development is extraordinarily important. Scientific discovery is one of the greatest joys of my life and the lives of many researchers, but it is not the be-all and end-all of human existence. There are relationships, love, faith, pursuit, martinis, the full spectrum of what makes life worth living. I'm not asking for zero risk, I'm just asking for proportionate risk. Accept some experimentation within reasonable boundaries, but setting loose an image generation system that acts as an industrial scale engine for digital filth, pumping it out at a rate of 6,700 images per hour onto a social media platform with 500 million users? Nah, Elon, there is a point where risk stops being proportionate and starts becoming recklessness with better branding. And one more thing on Grok's supposed technical superiority. Those sweet bench scores, 75% versus 74%, measure one very specific thing, how well a model solves software engineering problems from GitHub. That is not a full spectrum assessment of what people actually use LLMs for. The creative writing community is regularly frustrated by models being paraded as superior based on coding benchmarks that have nothing to do with their use cases. And before you start thinking that the creative writing community is just teenagers generating fanfiction stories, it includes screenwriters drafting dialogue, novelists working through structural problems, copywriters producing campaigns under deadlines, academics refining research papers, and journalists synthesizing complex sources into readable prose. These are professionals whose livelihoods depend on language quality, and a benchmark that measures whether a model can fix a Python function tells them absolutely nothing about whether it can hold tone across 3,000 words. A model that scores 1% higher on fixing GitHub bugs is not necessarily better at writing a novel, drafting a legal brief, composing a marketing campaign, or having a nuanced conversation about philosophy. Benchmarks measure what benchmarks measure. They don't measure what matters to the different strata of users. I know Elon's favorite thing to hate is censorship, but guardrails are not censorship any more than traffic lights are censorship. Nobody sits at a red light thinking, wow, the deep state has silenced my car. They just wait 30 seconds because society is not meant to be Mario Kart. They're the infrastructure that makes freedom functional. A speed limit doesn't oppress drivers. It stops them from killing pedestrians. A seatbelt mandate doesn't restrict liberty. It keeps people alive long enough to enjoy it, and an AI safety filter that prevents the generation of inappropriate material is not an assault on free speech, it is a basic prerequisite for operating in a civilized society. If we follow Musk's logic to its conclusion, if any restriction on AI output is censorship, then where does the line end? Is a warning label on an explosive device censorship? Is a padlock on a bank vault? Is a firewall on a server censorship? At some point, the argument stops being about freedom and starts being about one person's desire to avoid accountability, and the fact that Musk can maintain this position without meaningful consequence, that he can lose $240 billion in a week and still be the richest person alive, that his AI can generate deepfakes and face no personal liability, is itself the argument. When you're rich enough that consequences don't reach you, anti-censorship isn't a principle, it's a luxury. But that instinct to dodge accountability didn't stay confined to software. It actually traveled straight into the hardware. While Grok was generating headlines for all of the wrong reasons, Tesla was trying to sneakily get its full self-driving system approved across the European Union. FSD, despite the name, is not fully autonomous. It is a level 2 driver assistance system, meaning a human must supervise at all times. It uses 8 cameras and a neural network to steer, brake, change lanes, and navigate intersections. Since 2013, Musk has repeatedly predicted that Tesla would achieve full autonomy within 1 to 3 years. As of June 2026, that prediction remains unfulfilled. To secure European approval, Tesla presented safety data to regulators in Sweden and the Netherlands. According to Reuters, Tesla's policy manager told Swedish officials that FSD could travel over 7 times farther between crashes than human drivers, and that widespread adoption could have prevented 32,000 deaths and 1.9 million injuries. Independent researchers who examined that underlying methodology say the numbers are structurally misleading. Literally Musk with a mustache, the 7 times safer claims rests on a comparison that mixes different severity thresholds. Tesla counted only crashes in its fleet where airbags deployed, the most severe impact. It then compared that narrow rate against the US national crash database, which includes every crash resulting in a towed vehicle, a far lower severity bar. Marco Benedetti, an assistant research scientist at the University of Michigan and former NHTSA statistician, corrected the comparison to use the same severity thresholds for both groups. The safety advantage effectively disappeared. A viewer recently asked for some new cheese metaphors because they're lactose intolerant, and honestly, this safety report is the perfect dairy-free option. It is pure corporate American cheese, highly processed, structurally artificial, and 90% plastic. It's completely safe for the stomach, but absolutely fatal if you try to drive it. The 32,000 lives saved figure was even more creative, a sort of Tesla fan fiction in Excel, essentially. It assumed that every vehicle on every American road would be replaced by a Tesla operating in FSD mode, including semi-trucks and motorcycles. By that logic, if we replaced every pedestrian with a bouncy castle, we would completely eliminate sidewalk injuries, right? The math works perfectly as long as you completely ignore how reality works. The European Transport Safety Council's Dudley Curtis put it very directly: if Tesla wants to make safety claims of this magnitude, the company should give the data to a university, have it independently verified by a qualified researcher, and then let's talk. Sweden formally recommended rejecting FSD approval, partly because the system is, and this bears emphasis, engineered to exceed posted speed limits through a feature called speed offset, a safety system that is designed to speed, basically, because nothing really screams cutting-edge autonomous safety quite like a car that aggressively tailgates a Volvo because it thinks that local speed laws are merely gentle suggestions from the Matrix. Norway's Public Roads Administration responded to Tesla drivers who had cited the company's own safety report by noting that the figures are self-produced and difficult to correlate with actual government accident statistics. And then, of course, there's Greece, which approved FSD based on data from the other side of the Atlantic and declined to confirm whether that data came from anywhere other than Tesla itself, which is exactly the kind of rigorous vibes-based auditing that historically worked out wonders for the Greek national budget. This is the same pattern as the IPO, a narrative so confidently presented that it almost bypasses scrutiny. The difference is stakes. When investors buy a narrative, they lose money. When regulators buy a narrative about autonomous driving, people can lose their lives, and both narratives came from the same source. This kind of statistical manipulation, comparing different severity thresholds to manufacture a favorable result, is a classic methodology problem, and it's reasonably common in corporate presentations. But it's also easy to spot if you're trained in data and statistics, which is why this is, for me, always an argument for increasing data literacy for all of us. I'm not saying everyone needs to become an expert in probability theory or understand the properties of random variable distributions, but just having good critical thinking, asking the right questions, probing claims, fostering environments where disagreement is treated as an invitation rather than an attack, those are the basics. You don't need a PhD to ask, are you comparing like with like? You just need to be encouraged to ask, but apparently asking questions wasn't in the Greek regulatory budget. I want to be direct about something else because I think it matters a huge deal. Elon Musk is generally an exceptional salesperson. The ability to make investors value an unprofitable rocket company at $1.77 trillion, to present self-serving safety data with enough confidence that some regulators accept it at face value, to position the production of deepfakes as a free speech issue, that requires a skill set that almost nobody on this planet possesses. The aliens are taking notes, so should we. And the underlying ventures are not without merit, of course. SpaceX's reusable rocket technology is a genuine engineering achievement. Starlink provides satellite internet to millions of people in remote areas. Tesla accelerated the global transition to electric vehicles. These are real contributions that should not be dismissed, and I will never dismiss them. But take a step back and look at the structure. SpaceX is now, thanks to the xAI merger, simultaneously a rocket company, a satellite internet provider, and an AI company. It's called Space Exploration Technologies Corporation, and one of its primary assets is a chatbot that generates deepfakes. At what point do you rename this? Space AI? Grok X? The Musk Multi-Asset Speculative Holding Company, or MASH, which is coincidentally what's happening to retail portfolios right now? The entity has become so sprawling that the name itself is a narrative. Space exploration sounds a lot more inspiring than rockets plus internet plus an AI chatbot with a deepfake problem plus $20 billion in bridge loan debt. And this is where the salesmanship becomes impossible to separate from the product, and this is the biggest problem, because every single one of Musk's ventures runs on the exact same engine, a narrative so compelling that people buy in before the evidence catches up. Investors bought SpaceX at $1.77 trillion before the company was profitable. Regulators considered approving FSD before the safety data was independently verified. The public accepted free speech AI before the consequences of unrestricted image generation manifested in the form of deepfakes. And for a while, sometimes weeks, sometimes years, each narrative works brilliantly. That's the skill. That's the salesmanship. But what makes Musk specifically good at this? Because the world has plenty of wealthy people with very ambitious visions, and most of them can't sell like he can. I think the mechanism is this. I think he has an extraordinary ability to identify what narrative is missing, what story the world wants to hear but nobody is telling, and then to position himself as the person delivering it. Space exploration had become a government bureaucracy. Musk made it entrepreneurial and exciting again. Electric vehicles were frumpy and slow. Tesla made them aspirational. AI safety was being framed as a constraint on progress. Grok framed the absence of safety as liberation. In each case, he identified a demographic that wanted to believe in something, understood what the something was, and then built a narrative around it with enough conviction that the evidence became secondary to the feeling. I wouldn't even call it manipulative, but it does involve a degree of influencing public opinion. Influence as a skill is genuinely extraordinary, and that's what makes the accountability question so difficult, because the same skill that produced SpaceX's engineering achievements also produced the IPO valuation that burned retail investors. The same confidence that accelerated EV adoption also presented cooked safety data to European regulators. The same anti-censorship conviction that appeals to free speech advocates also enabled the generation of pixelated radioactive nonsense at the exact same industrial scale. The talent is real, the contributions are definitely real, and the harms are real. They come from the same source. I genuinely wish that leaders with this kind of charisma, this kind of ability to move people and resources toward ambitious goals, were also leaders who accepted the responsibility that comes with that influence. The world needs visionary salespeople. It needs people who can convince others to fund the impossible. It just also needs those people to understand that when you're operating at this scale, when billions of lives are affected by your platforms, your vehicles, your AI, your political spending, the narrative has to be accountable to reality, not eventually, not when the stock corrects, not when a researcher catches the data, from the very beginning. And the question that I keep coming back to is this: what happens when the world's greatest salesman is accountable to no one? When you can lose $240 billion in a single week and still be the wealthiest person alive? When your AI can generate abuse material and your response is to put it behind a paywall? When you present manipulated data to foreign regulators and the consequences is that Greece says yes anyway? When every guardrail is framed as censorship, every regulator as an obstacle, every critic as someone who doesn't understand the vision? What happens is exactly what's happening. A trillion-dollar empire built on narrative, checked only intermittently by a reality that keeps arriving a few weeks late. I've said it before and I'll say it again, scale creates obligation. When your AI is embedded in a platform with 500 million users, when your cars are driving on public roads using safety data you presented to regulators, when your IPO makes you the wealthiest person in human history, you carry responsibility proportionate to that reach. When responsibility disappears, freedom turns into a shield for the person at the top and a bill handed to everyone below. The retail investors who bought SpaceX at $225 bear the consequences. The people whose images were used without consent to generate deepfakes bear the consequences. The European drivers who might eventually share their roads with an FSD system approved on the basis of unchecked data, they bear the consequences too. Musk bears none. And that asymmetry between the scale of influence and the absence of personal accountability is the actual story beneath the trillionaire headline, beneath the IPO, beneath the deepfakes, beneath the cooked safety data. Elon Musk is the ultimate salesman, but the product he's selling isn't space travel or AI, it's the illusion that accountability is optional for the ultra-rich. And based on the evidence, the market, the regulators, and the public are finally starting to check the receipt, which is probably great news for our interplanetary reputation. Those aliens watching us through their telescopes have spent months wondering why a species capable of split-second data synthesis is still letting one guy grade his own homework. And somehow, every time he turns in the paper, the answer is, excellent work, Elon, please regulate yourself harder. If they're laughing, it's because we took this long to ask for the receipt. But look, Elon's accountability crisis is really only one side of the story here, because while regulators are finally waking up, there is a much broader, quieter shift happening with the public. If you want to see what happens when the hype dies and look at the latest data on how public trust in AI completely collapsed while adoption skyrocketed, I broke that entire pattern down in this video right here. Thank you so much for watching. Subscribe. I'll see you on the next one.